Welcome back to another episode of Feel Good Life. I'm Jennifer James, your host, and I have with me today a special guest from the University of Arkansas, Dr. Hunter Byram.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well, Hunter. It's good to see you.
Man, I'm honored to be here.
Good to see you. Hunter and I have a pretty long history, I think. We've at least run across each other a lot over the years.
Yeah, I know. At minimum, you were a part of my interview process in 20... Was that 21, actually? I think it was in 21, so I mean, we're going on 4 years now.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about your background and history. Yeah. Where'd you grow up? Where all have you been in your education?
Yeah, so I'm from Arkansas. I'm actually not too far from here. My dad actually worked at Jayco Construction in Newport.
Really?
So he drove to Newport every day back, you know, to and from Floral, Arkansas.
So yeah, not far at all.
Not far at all.
Actually, and an ag background somewhat.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. So yeah, actually cow-calf operation, broiler chickens, and a peach orchard, and greenhouses, and all kinds of stuff up there.
Yeah, a lot of diversity then.
You gotta be diverse. That's where I learned risk management.
Exactly, exactly. And so then you went to Arkansas State first?
That's correct. So I went to Arkansas State, and the infamous Burt Greenwalt nabbed me up, and I became an agribusiness major, and then I interned for Rick Crawford, Congressman Rick Crawford, and did some. Spent 4 months in his D.C. office. I actually spent 4 months in Senator Bozeman's Jonesboro office, too, and working with Nathan Davis at the time as he was there. And then after that, I went to work for the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives with Chuck Connor and his group, working in ag policy that cooperatives will be most interested in. So Riceland is actually a member of the NCFC, yes, as well as Staple Cotton, which Staple Cotton helped fund some of my internships. And so, you know, ag policy background, Arkansas State, and then I went to Mississippi State and became a Bulldog for a couple of years. And then I went to Kansas State, became a Wildcat. You know, you can tell at this point, you know, I have all kinds of mascots and I feel like I'm having a mascot identity crisis. Right. But then, you know, then I got my wits about me and I got to come to Arkansas and be on faculty here. So I'm an assistant professor formerly of agricultural economics and agribusiness. And I focus mostly on farm policy, risk management, you know, anything with forward contracting, marketing, things of that nature.
Yeah, which for us here in the grain business encompasses quite a lot.
Oh my goodness, absolutely.
And I've noticed since you've been back, it seems like we're seeing a lot more ag economist information actually getting out to the farmer. It seemed like we kind of had a lull in retirements and hirings. I'm sure COVID had a lot to do with that at the university. Yep. So you've got a weekly newsletter. I know I get it by email called Morning
Coffee and Ag Markets.
Yes.
I'm glad that you're receiving our information. Hopefully it's helpful.
Very
and if it
helpful.
Isn't, I hope that you would tell me because we want to make it good.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Uh-huh, no. off script, right? But yeah, weekly podcast. We cover a risk management topic or a topic that we talk about prices and how the market is impacting prices every single week. We also provide local cash bids, basis for Arkansas, for East Arkansas farmers. So primarily commodity row crop. We also talk about diesel prices, fertilizer prices, the Mississippi River level, which is a very big deal to those in East Arkansas because most of our demand, so to speak, is going to be from exports. And to get the exports out, you got to take it to the Mississippi River and then down to New Orleans to where it ultimately gets sent out to the other countries.
Yes. So. Well, I personally think it's a very good newsletter. I look forward every Monday morning to get that update. And I really appreciate the portion that does have the fertilizer prices, the diesel prices, and things like that, because you can take the time and call around to local, you know, cooperative, you know, farm supply companies and things like that. But, you know, you're not getting such a probably a broad spectrum that you guys are able to. And so it's really helpful to have that every week.
Well, I'm really glad that you said that because that's what we want. That's what we wanted. So whenever we were putting this together, I was like, man, we need something on fertilizer prices because we get so many calls on it. I said, we need to just call everybody for the farmer. And so what we do is we pretty much call all the input suppliers that we can get to answer that day and just take an average of those prices and we just spit those out and say, hey, if you want to, you know, price more specific to where you are, just give us a call or send us an email.
Yeah. No, it's really helpful. And then just the tidbits of information, you know, what's been going on policy-wise or weather-wise, which there's been quite a bit of reporting on the weather here in eastern Arkansas.
Absolutely.
And I know your team actually put some pretty important data together.
Yeah, so we put out a flood damage estimate, and oh my goodness, I think we're still, like, that number, the first number that we came up with was, I think, 88 or 89 million, and we said that was conservative, and then we revised the estimates. We talked to our agents and talked to our agronomists and updated the acreage that was flooded, and then that went up to about $100 million, and I think it's even more than that, frankly, because we're not accounting for, like, the loss in yield potential, because as you know, probably better than anybody else, like, I mean, as you go deeper into the season, your yield potential falls, and what else falls? Your revenue potential. So, I mean, we're at a still fairly conservative $100 million estimate on this flood damage.
And even today, as we're recording this in late June, we are still receiving rains on a regular basis. We got a half inch again this morning. So those losses are probably actually still accumulating.
Yep, absolutely. And that's been the issue, right? So we had 3 months worth of rain in about 3 days in April. That big flood event. I mean, driving on 67, if you're going through like Jacksonville per se, there was like a spot in the road that was just covered in water. There was a softball or baseball complex out to the right as you're heading north, and it was totally covered. It's like if you've ever been to a baseball park, like or just a local park, and you see those yellow protective guards on there, you couldn't see them.
Oh, the top of the fences were even underwater.
Totally underwater. Crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
So you got that. So then whether you're thinking, well, not you, but maybe people generally be like, well, that water just drains off, right?
It's gone. Everything's okay now.
Well, if it doesn't rain again. But to your point, like 2 or 3 inches a week we've seen rain. Wow. And that is impacting production losses. That's impacting, you know, planting decisions and preventive planting decisions. And so, I mean, it's prices are in the tank, no doubt. But, I mean, yields are going to be in the tank too, I'm afraid.
Well, we had a pretty good run early to mid-April. And in fact, we were getting so much planted so quickly, we were kind of like, ugh, do we need to slow down a little bit?
It's too good to be true.
Yeah. Well, hindsight, we should have kept pushing, you know, instead of slowing down.
Like 2020.
You never know about the weather in this business for sure. Yeah. So you touched on a few things. You touched on the prices. We started out not very good, and we're still not very good. Great epiphanies on what's going to happen in the commodity market.
Great is a very subjective word. Well, actually, there's going to be an episode coming out next week where we're looking at, we're pretty much seeing the best price that we're probably going to see this year across our crops. I mean, because typically, you know, in terms of price seasonality, we see in the commodity market, especially in corn and soybeans, we see those prices increase until about June, July, and the prices tend to come down. That's mostly because the market becomes more confident in what the production is actually going to be, because like June acreage comes out from USDA, and then like we have a better idea of like how much is actually going to be out there that needs to be marketed. So there's premiums leading up to the June acreage pretty much, and there's discounts coming out of the June acreage, right? So we're kind of in that window right now. And so all that to say, I've looked at the past 25 years of how prices behave relative to June, just taking a simple average of the differences between, you know, July and June, August and June, and so on. I mean, really, it's only declines from this point out. I mean, you're looking at, it depends on the crop, right? But for the most part, it's going to be declines from here on out. So in terms of marketing, really depends on your situation. Obviously, it depends on your rental agreement, depends on your cost structure, so many things. But it's not a bad idea to start thinking about doing some marketing now versus just relying on what happens right at harvest. Because if that's your strategy, you're just missing out on some prices.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the only thing that could change that is just a major weather event in a large growing area or
massive drought somewhere.
Some sort of world event in probably just in a particular commodity. You know, it may not be broad spectrum on that. So, yeah, and it's been pretty tough. I think I'm kind of a planner, marketer. I mean, I put the plan in. I'm pretty good about trying to meet those targets or whatever.
Absolutely.
But it's really hard to sell a crop when you're selling it below the cost.
It is. And it's like, you know, what do you do? I mean, is there anything that you can do? I mean, you can try and minimize the bleeding, but I mean, if you're not even at break even, what's the point, right? I mean, what's the point of even growing a crop? I mean, and there are a lot of farmers that I'm sure that you've heard, like, they're thinking about that. They're like, do I even plant this year? You know, I can't get out there and plant my crop. Maybe prevent planting is going to be the best thing for me. I know that it's kind of a taboo thing, but I mean, it has been a really wet year.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of folks I know that, you know, in the area, really all across East Arkansas, been calling me and talking to me, and they're like, listen, like, is it actually better for me to do prevent planting? Like, I don't want to be that way, but like, is that a good idea? And I mean, all of the things costing, just looking at our budgets, and depending on the rental agreement, I mean, it could be a good thing just to go with prevent plant and not even try and plant your crop, because like I said, your yield potential falls. You know, rents, if you weren't able to renegotiate your rental agreement, I mean, that expense is massive. So, just a really hard time. And I mean, these prices, back to that, I mean, what do you do? You really can't do much. Yeah,
there aren't many alternatives. And the prevent plant, you know, we talk a lot about that, and I think farmers hear that, and maybe that's out in the public too, but it totally depends on what type of coverage you individually, your operation purchased.
That's right.
So when you say we might need to do that, but maybe I didn't buy up enough coverage, or maybe I didn't have any crop insurance at all, or maybe I just had the catastrophic policies, are very, very slim coverage. And so I think out in the public, when they hear, oh, there's crop insurance, you guys can just buy crop insurance, it doesn't come anywhere near to making a farmer back whole.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. And, you know, insurance is not designed to make you whole, right? Because there's a deductible. And because of that deductible, it's really just trying to, in a year like this, you're not going to get any price protection. Because when the projected price is below break even, really it's all about those right now that have really good yields and get those good yield guarantees. And so that's pretty much going to be the best case, unfortunately, in the crop insurance world.
It makes the decision hard. It makes it hard for you when you have all the different farmers calling, because there's so many questions you have to know the answer. You know, what kind of coverage? What proportion of acreage of which crops? And, you know, there's a lot to put into it to make those decisions, which for some people causes you to freeze, you know. So decision fatigue almost.
Seriously. And it's not just that. I mean, y'all are thinking about, like, what kind of, you know, nitrogen. You know, you got your phosphorus, potassium. You got macros, micros. You've got insecticides, fungicides. I mean, oh my goodness. I mean, you literally have to be a CEO to do this anymore. I mean, I'm sure you know better than anybody else.
Well, I've said a lot in the last few years that I think a farmer of the future probably needs to be a master's in business.
Seriously.
And not so much in agronomy. Mm-hmm. And those of us who love the agronomy part just need to go be an agronomist and be a consultant or work in that space, and maybe not aren't the farmer anymore because there's so much that is reliant on the business side of our businesses now.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you got to know all the aspects, right? I mean, like, you got to know about all the input applications per acre. You need to know your soil type. And, you know, clay, loam, silt, all that stuff. All the stuff, by the way, I'm way out of my comfort zone on this, you know. But, I mean, it's just to say it all works together. Yeah. It all works together.
Yeah, and one size doesn't fit every operation.
Oh, not at all.
So that's what makes this fun, but it also makes it really challenging, too.
But, you know, it really can create more or less an incentive for a farmer to really, like, nail down, like, okay, what is my operation? Where are my costs at? What is my soil type? You know, what is my local weather like? Am I near a floodplain? You know, all those kinds of things to help go into what is specific to their operation. Because I can only help someone as much as they can ask the right questions. With as much detail as they can give me, I can help them better, if that makes sense.
Right. And just to bounce ideas off of somebody who is not in it every day. Yeah. You know, sometimes that light bulb turns on and that could be the answer that you were really looking for to plug in somewhere on your operation. So I think it's so important that we rely on you guys and have you there looking at so many different directions. You know, y'all are coming at it from a different direction sometimes than we are.
Well, and we rely on you as well. I mean, seriously, like, I love coming to extension meetings and talking to you and talking to Jeff and Tommy and just hearing what y'all are going through and, like, what's going in your thought process, because it helps me to communicate what I think is important better. Mm-hmm. And then you can tell me, like, no, Hunter, that's not important. Talk more about this. And you can do that in a very graceful way and just be like, no, talk more about this. And then that kind of helps me update in my mind, okay, I should be focusing more on this aspect. And then we just kind of keep that going. I think it's all about relationship, all about communication, and just hopefully we can help us be better and stay in business pretty much.
And so how long does it take you, you know, if you get a focus and you have an idea for some type of research? Yeah. I mean, obviously you're not working in a growing cycle like the agronomy side. So how long does it take you to kind of get to the end?
Man, it really depends. Typical economist answer, it really depends. But it really does. I'll tell you right now, I've got a paper that's under review that's about to be out. It is accepted, but we started the process on this paper and we submitted it to a journal back in November, and it's just now going to come out in print. and it's on hurricane incidents in East Arkansas and the Mississippi Delta. I'm so excited to share that with you and with everyone whenever that comes out. But that's just the review process starting in November, and now we're in, what, June? So, I mean, what, 8 months later? That's just the review process. Leading up to that, we spent about a year doing the analysis. So it just really depends on the topic, because, I mean, that's a very serious peer-reviewed topic. Serious in the sense of, like, very rigorous with the stats and the numbers and all that stuff, and, you know, trying to convince other economists that we have it right.
Right.
It can be a really hard thing to do. We are very difficult people.
I was going to say, are y'all hard on each other?
Gosh, very hard. Too hard. But then, you know, there's also stuff that's very timely and relevant and doesn't really require the rigor that would be for a peer-reviewed journal. We can get that stuff out very quickly. And so, you know, they're, you know, like an extension fact sheet, for instance. Ideally, I would have this paper and then I'd put out information in a fact sheet from the paper. But sometimes as I'm writing the paper, I just go ahead and send some stuff out in the fact sheet. You know, let's say like a supplemental coverage option or enhanced coverage option. Got a paper under review with that, but working on a fact sheet just to get that out so that people know what ECO and SCO is. So it's hard to really nail it down to one, like, clear path. But, you know, the peer review process takes a while. There are some short-term publications that can come out, too, that, you know, aren't as rigorous, but also very important.
And so does most of your work come from farmers, or does it come from your peers, or, you know, how do you know what to start working on?
I think just asking lots of questions to farmers, frankly. That's where a lot of my questions stem from, is like, what is important to a farmer? What's the issue being faced by a farmer? So I'll tell you a little bit more about this paper that I was just talking about, was with hurricane incidents. A guy at, I think it was an Arkansas Soybean Association meeting, about the HIP program, the HIP WI program. And he's like, man, I'm up in Northeast Arkansas, but I can't get it. But like hurricanes, like, they impact me. Like, it may not be like Cat 4 by the time it gets to me. But it still impacts me. And so I was like, that's interesting. And I'm like, so you're saying that you consider the hurricane incidents to be something that is a risk that you want to manage, but you can't get the coverage to manage it.
And the HIP WI is an insurance policy. Is
that's
that
right.
Correct? And what does that say?
That's the Hurricane Insurance Protection Wind Index.
Okay. And so mostly that's probably people in our region on the Gulf Coast.
So it would be all the Louisiana production counties, most of the Mississippi counties, and then like Southeast Arkansas. There's like five or six counties down in Southeast Arkansas. So there's some counties in Arkansas that would qualify for it because tropical depressions are also covered in that. But I was just kind of like, well, I mean, these farmers up in Northeast Arkansas, like yourself, like, y'all are thinking about that, especially with rice, right? I mean, because lodging can occur and too much rain, and then you get, you know, sprouting in the heads and things like that. And so kind of like, maybe we should look more into this.
Yeah.
And as a sneak peek, we do find that, no, Northeast Arkansas farmers, they need this. And that's what we find. And so that's a prime example of like how I can work with y'all, and like Extension can work with y'all, and then we come out with a research paper trying to convince everybody that you guys need this, and I put out some information on it.
But so, working in the insurance space and with the risk management agency, RMA, who's over crop insurance federally, it takes a long time to affect any changes in our policies.
Yep, it does take a while. A lot of channels, a lot of bureaucracy, more or less, and I'm sure the folks there would say the same thing, because it's not that they're against you. I think that they are for you, but there are a lot of channels to go through to be able to convince people that this is what needs to happen.
And how to write it properly and have the right actuarials that support it.
That's right.
But I've found just in my time in the industry, of course, the rice industry has worked on different types of products. And of course, we did get the down rice product was one of the success stories. But it seemed like it just took so long and so much red tape to get through. So.
Well, and I don't know the history of that. Like, I know the coverage, but would you want to like maybe talk a little bit about the history of the down rice and just kind of the process that went into it as much as you want to share?
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, I probably can't remember all the process.
Sure.
I know we started talking about, you know, that we needed it, but then trying to figure out exactly how to write that kind of coverage, because it is going to be in an area, you know, your whole farm, hopefully, you know, is not down. And so pulling it back to the coverage that we have now, where it is based on the field and a certain amount of deductible of acres within that field, if I'm correct, actually is a really good product. I mean, I have have used it in the past few years, and I think it has good coverage because of the fact that you don't have to have the problem on your entire crop mm-hmm. to trigger somewhat of a claim. And it doesn't cover the loss of the rice. It just helps you fray some of the harvest costs, which,
that's great.
You know, we'll take any help that we can when we're in those type of conditions.
Yeah, and I think what's real important here is, like, we can really get technical, but I think you understand this, and everybody that's in farming understands this. Like, you can't control the weather. You cannot control Mother Nature. You can't control the markets. You can't control what's happening with global politics, domestic politics, whatever that may be. And so there's just so many things out of your control. And that's why insurance and the Farm Safety Net, like ARC and PLC, mm-hmm. like very important programs, just because you cannot control those things. And we want to have that safe, affordable, abundant food, food supply that everyone talks about. To be able to provide that, there's got to be a safety net.
Well, and safety net, you mentioned that, so that's a good segue into talking about some of the policy that currently is trying to happen in D.C. You know, we don't have a farm bill right now that is current. We have an extension of the 2018 farm bill, which is based off of...
An extension of the 14th farm bill.
Which is based off of prices from 2010 or 11. Uh-huh. Yeah, way back. We all know that none of us can balance our home budget off of a 2010 prices for anything.
That's
very true. We're really far behind in our farm policy. Although we've seen some movement with what they are calling the Big Beautiful Bill.
The Reconciliation Package
uh-huh. and some of those PLC reference prices would be very helpful for all commodities, I believe, and some of the adjustments that are in the House version and then are proposed in the Senate version. Mm-hmm. So do you have any insight into anything else that's happened recently on the policy front that listeners might need to be aware of?
Yeah, so the Senate came out with their, the Senate Act Committee came out with their language for their version of the safety net in terms of the statutory reference prices. With the House version, they're the exact same. The ARC provisions, I also believe, are the exact same, if not very similar. So we're talking about an increase of the ARC coverage guarantee from 86% to, I think it's 90%. It's either 88 or 90%. So there's at least going to be a 2 percentage point increase in that coverage. The statutory reference price, I know that the rice price is going to be increased to $16.90 if it's passed. Per
hundredweight.
That's very encouraging. Increases to payment limitations, I think it's from $125,000 to like $155,000, maybe $150,000. Mm-hmm. So increases to payment limits, which will be very important if you're going to increase the statutory reference prices. Because it's like, you could increase the reference prices, but if there's a really hard year like what we're in right now and it triggers, you're not going to get the full benefit, right? Like the full benefit per acre will be very limited under those payment limitations.
Mm-hmm. That will be retroactive for the 25 crop year.
In the Senate version, that's what I've seen. The House version, I don't know if they have that in the House version, okay. but the Senate version, they've got the retroactive for 2025. Now, that's well and good, and I'm all for that. But the issue becomes, you don't get your money until like 2026.
Right,
and
sure.
So... okay, say it triggers this year, not going to be helpful. And that's hard for someone that's just like general public, like, wait a minute, so like they're saying it triggers this year, they're okay. Not exactly. It's because you're not going to get the money from FSA until 2026.
Yeah, until November almost. Yeah. October, November of 2026, not just January 26.
That's whenever you need it for your loan, right? Because your lender's saying, hey, like, pony up, you know? I mean, and it's not like in a mean way, but I mean, like, let's just be honest. Like, they got to stay in business. Y'all got to stay in business. And so to get your loan, you got to be able to show that you can make the payment.
Right.
And be able to make it in the next year, too. So, yeah, it's going to be, it's great. Like, hey, I definitely applaud everyone involved, but I just don't see anything too beneficial for 2025. Sure, there'll be a payment that's triggered, but you won't get that cash till 26.
Yeah, so. And with the weather that continues to hurt us, are people talking disaster already again for 2025?
That I haven't heard for sure. I think there are some people talking about it. Don't know for sure. Don't want to speak too out of turn, but I can't speak with too much certainty on that.
Yeah, and probably don't want to get too far ahead of any traction that we currently have on some this PLC and payment limits and things like that, too.
Right.
Don't want to muddy the waters anymore than we have to.
That's right. Got to be very wise.
Well, you mentioned farmers, paying off their loans and things like that, and we've seen in Arkansas, I guess, are we into 3 years of eating away at operational equity at this point? I mean, what's your...
Yeah. yeah, I would say 2022 was definitely the high, because, I mean, coming out of COVID, it wasn't just because of, like, COVID payments. I mean, the prices were really good, right? Because what happened was people went and stayed in their house for a while, and then whenever the COVID restrictions were lessened, demand picked up because people left their house. Mm-hmm. And so prices went up for commodities. That's just normal. And so we had really high prices. We did have some COVID assistance, but really good farm income in 2022. Since then, we've just continued to see declines in farm revenues, farm receipts since then. We have a report with the Rural and Farm Finance Policy Analysis Center with the University of Missouri, and we show that receipts for corn have declined since 22, soybeans have declined since 22, or rice and for cotton. It's kind of gone back and forth, but overall declines since 2022. Yeah, I mean, farmers are going to be eating away at that equity if revenues continue to decline.
Yeah, and costs have increased or stayed the same.
That's right.
So we're just squeezing.
Yeah, at best they've stayed the same, yeah. Right? I mean,
what are people saying about 2026? Or is everybody just so quiet and depressed in the corner about 25 that nobody's looking forward yet?
I definitely think it's been a really hard year. I mean, I feel like I can't really say that, you know, because, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not taking the risk. But, I mean, it's been a hard year. And I don't know if anybody wants to think about 26. I've been thinking about 26, and I'm not too encouraged, frankly.
I don't think anyone is.
No, I mean, we're going to be here for sure 25, 26, maybe in 27. Just really depends. It's hard to really go out. It's really hard to go out beyond a day, let alone a year or
Isn't
two.
Isn't that?
You know, yes. But all other things constant, really, I mean, it's not looking good.
Yeah. Well, my father, who I think probably has 58 crops under his belt, we had a conversation just yesterday, and he said, you know, I really don't think I have ever seen it quite this bad. And so that's a guy that's seen a lot the years, right?
Man, that really scares me.
So my next question is what are we going to do? And in normal farmer fashion, he said, we're going to live to fight another day. We're going to get up tomorrow. We're just going to keep pushing. And thankfully, the farmers in America have that attitude.
Absolutely.
Or the ag industry in America would have been gone a really long time ago.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I mean, I was raised by farmers. And that's why I'm doing the job that I'm doing now, because I want to help farmers stay in business. I mean, like, I'm so inspired by what y'all do, the risks that y'all take. And it's amazing what y'all do.
Well, we're all going to just live to find another day.
That's right. That's all you can do, right?
Yeah, I guess so. One other thing I wanted to be sure and get out there is another email newsletter that I get.
Yeah.
Which is Southern Ag Today.
Yeah.
And I know it's a collaboration, and University of Arkansas is included in that. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so Southern Ag Today is a daily newsletter. Monday through Friday, at least, through the work week, that is co-sponsored and put on by the Southern Risk Management Education Center, which is housed at the University of Arkansas, as well as the Agricultural Food Policy Center, AFPC, at Texas A&M. So it's kind of a joint effort between those two entities, the SRMEC and the AFPC. There are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there'll be a newsletter that's sent out, and there'll be a different topic that's covered on each one of those days. On Mondays, we'll talk about farm management decisions. Tuesdays, livestock markets. Wednesday is crop markets. Thursday is going to be your policy and trade day. And then Friday will be specialty topics. We even have law and legal issues that are covered on Friday. And so there are different topic areas, and hopefully that we can serve our stakeholders best by covering a wide array of topics. And within each one of those topics, there's a lot of different things that are covered. And so this is going to be a conglomeration, a coming together of all the agricultural economics extension faculty across the Southeast. So we're talking, you know, Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Virginia, South Carolina, you know, North Carolina. I think that's everybody. If I'm leaving somebody out, let me know. I think that's everybody. And there's going to be faculty from those land-grant institutions and some non-land-grant institutions that are going to be talking about these various topics that I just mentioned. A lot of different perspectives, because it's not just coming from one state, it's coming from the whole region.
Right.
And so it gives us a heartbeat as to what's going on in the Southeast region, because we know that the local climate and the production systems and, you know, soil types and production practices are going to be very unique in the Southeast region. So it's good to get that special Southeastern coverage for all those things.
Yeah, I look forward to it every day too. Well, and of course, the livestock, you know, I just delete that day. You just delete the topic that you may, you know, if they're talking about citrus or something, well, that doesn't apply to me. But most every day, there's usually something, you know, a topic that might be interesting, and we might want to learn about some of those other sectors in the ag, especially in the Southeast, to be able to support our neighbor farmers.
That's right. And you know, one thing that I've learned actually, so, you know, I was raised, you know, cattle and chickens. And so Burt Greenwald really conditioned me on crops. So that's why I'm doing crops now is I blame Burt Greenwald, but I love it. I love the people. I love farmers of all kinds. And I'll tell you that with the farm income report that came out last, I think that was last fall when USDA was projecting farm income, and we saw the increase.
Yes.
Right? It was really important to tease out the different sectors within agriculture because we were showing that USDA was showing that cattle receipts projected way up because prices are a lot higher, whereas us in row crop country, like, and prices are way down. So it was really important to kind of see, you know, I guess the differences in the cycles between the two industries and how we can leverage knowledge of both those industries to be able to interpret the finding as like, yeah, there's more farm income. Well, if I say that to you and I don't say anything else, you're probably thinking, no, it's not.
Right. You have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, so I talked at the Arkansas Rice Federation meeting in, I think that was February. And whenever I kind of let off with the increase in farm income, I kind of paused. I knew where I was going, but I paused just to kind of look at the room. And I'm telling you, talk about some mad-looking people. I said, listen, don't worry. I know where you are. And USDA does, too. They're just not being as clear about that. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really good to kind of know, okay, this is where cattle is at. This is where the row crops are at.
Yeah. But since that time, almost most publications are telling that story and the details
right.
What those numbers look like.
That's right.
So, which is good. It's good to have you folks fighting for us out there in the press, too.
Happy to. Absolutely.
Well, any other publications or podcasts or anything like that that's coming out from the University of Arkansas, or where can we go find those things? Not even just the, maybe not just economic, but there's a lot of agronomy things, too.
Yeah. Our row crop agronomists, they actually have a I think it's called the Row Crops Podcast that's put out through Extension. I think it's like Jared Harkey and Jeremy Ross, Jason Kelly, Zach Treadway, our new Cotton Peanut guy. They all get together and just talk about what's going on out there in row crop country and talk about more of the agronomic side of things, mm-hmm. which I think is very important. So that's a really, so the Row Crops Podcast is really good. I'll tell you one that's not university related that I've listened to a lot. That's Grain Markets and Other Stuff by Joe Vaklovic. Okay. He comes out every day, about 10, 13 minute podcast every day. And he does a fantastic job. So I don't know if Joe's ever going to see this, but like, Joe, you do great work. Like, I really appreciate what you and your team do. You and McKenzie do awesome stuff. But I love tuning into their podcast, Affiliated. Like, it's just a great resource.
Okay, so, well, yeah. I had not heard of that. And about 10 or 15 minutes in the morning, you know?
Yeah, I put on like time and a half, and I'm like done with it before I get to work. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, my commute's not that far. So.
That's true. That's true. Maybe while you're running.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. Can I take notes? Do I need notes or can I just get it?
Yeah.
It'd
right.
be okay. All right. Well, Hunter, thank you so much for spending some time with me.
This is great.
And I know the information that you're sharing is super valuable to not only Arkansas farmers, but farmers across the Southeast and all rice farmers and soybean farmers. And so keep doing what you're doing and we appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, guys, for listening today. And I'll see y'all in the field.